Hey, so hi everyone. I'm Stacy.
I'm Ashley.
And you're listening to Soul Struggles Podcast.
Welcome back. It's now 2021. My brain. It's been a long couple weeks.
Well, also every year, it's always hard getting into the mindset. It's a new year. So for like the first couple weeks or month, you're always crossing out the date that you've written because you wrote like last year's date.
Well, also, my school right now is insisting on, because it's still the school year for them is 1 year. So it's like 2020 school year. So everything, all of our documents still is like winter of 2020. And I'm like, what? We've done this.
Yeah, that gets super confusing. Because like in Canada, the school year would be like 2020 to 2021.
Yeah. No, they called out all my paperwork for camp because it's like winter 2021. And they're like, no, it's winter 2020. And I was like, but we've already done this.
Yeah.
Don't mess with my mind.
I'm just happy my school is done.
Oh, middle school. How amazing that is. I guess we should start about giving a quick update on the podcast and us and our plans for 2021. So I will start with my cone of shame. I broke my computer on Christmas Day / it just died. It was done.
I think you knew for a while, though, last year that it was getting towards the end.
But I hoped. I had hope. That note, I was not prepared for it because why prepare for the inevitable? And it's going to take me probably 2 to 3 months to buy a new one because technology is not cheap in Korea.
Nope.
So that has actually shifted our 2021 plans. We're still going to do eventually our deep dive into COVID and a couple other deep dives, but they are beasts to edit. They're
yep.
at least like an hour when they come out edited.
Well, we tried recording one of the episodes and we decided after the fact that it wasn't up to our standards and what we wanted to actually present mm-hmm. to the audience. So we need to redo it. We're spending a lot of time researching it, but with Ashley's computer being kaput, that kind of puts a lot of editing on my lap, which is fine. But
yes.
when you have the bigger episodes, they take a lot of time and a lot of energy.
Especially if they're multi-parts back to back. So yeah. having two people edit makes them plausible in a realistic time span.
Or because sometimes we do record like 3 episodes at one time. If we have one big episode that's going to take someone like 2 weeks to edit, then at least the other person can edit the other 2 episodes that are shorter and put those yeah. up and give the other person more than enough time to really edit and polish the longer, heavier episode.
So on that exciting note, we are currently recording this. I am on my cell phone, so I don't know how the sound quality is going to come out, if it's going to be viable. This also is probably going to impact our abilities to record episodes. So it just might not be every week, unfortunately.
The other thing is, like, I myself own 2 computers, but we're still at level 2.5 here in Seoul. The case numbers are going down, but we don't know if they're going to bounce back up. And it's really just not safe right now to have, say, Ashley coming to my house to record.
Especially because we're about to enter into Lunar New Year starting next month. And the entire country is going to be locked down again because they are trying their best to stay on top of things. So that's going to be kind of coming into play on what's happening with us. I'm hoping, really hoping by the end of March to have a laptop. We'll see.
Fingers crossed.
We'll make it work. Something, my washing machine will blow up or something and it'll get postponed as always.
That's life.
So on that exciting note, fun things are coming. I don't know if I'd call them fun. Heavy topics are coming. But until then, we're going to approach Korea from a bit of a lighthearted, less researched, fun time.
More of our own opinions and our lived experiences before yeah. and during our time here in Korea.
And maybe even get a couple friends on if things actually work out.
Fingers crossed on that one too. Scheduling can be hard.
Scheduling can be hard. So we're going to do our best, especially when this is a hobby and everyone else, including us, are working full time.
Working full time. And then some of our friends, they're in areas of Korea that aren't as severely locked down. So they can still meet up, hang out, and do things. And Ashley and I are...
We moved to the big city. We made that choice. And now we're stuck with a population around us. I guess this is probably a good spot to transition and start today's topic. Speaking of thoughts about Korea, today we're going to be looking at things we believed to be true about Korea before we got here and realized we were wrong. So we're talking a bit about our biases. Currently, there's been a rise on social media platforms like TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube presenting some pretty old school ideas about Korea and Asia, things that were presented back in the day on like Tumblr. Shout out to the first wave of the Korean wave people. You know what happened on Tumblr. We're going to just kind of reflect on our own biases and get a good laugh at them and talk about why they were dumb. Our heads were definitely in the cloud.
Yeah, and we're also going to mention some big ones that are kind of oversweeping through people who are interested in Korea. We might not have believed these biases ourselves, we may have, but we're also going to mention those ones as well and kind of debunk them.
We've definitely met people who believe them, if we didn't personally believe it, which I think is also a really weird phenomenon of meeting like multiple people and be like, why? Why did you think that? And then them meeting me and be like, why would you think that? Me being like, I don't know. I'm dumb.
Yeah.
So,
or thinking you're going to be friends with someone, they say that a bias that they're like, they think about Korea, and then you say like, no, and then you're not friends.
So quick.
You burst their bubble.
Yeah. We'll start with the more extreme ones, which are the like ones that a lot of the expat community makes fun of if you've been in Korea longer than a month, because you're like, my God, that's dumb. But I understand where it comes from. So the classic, do you want to say the classic one, Stacey?
Oh, it depends on which one that is. I think one of the big ones is that Korean men are going to treat me like a queen. Korean men, they are magically the best.
I'm a foreigner, so I'm exotic, which means everyone's going to fall in love with me.
Oh, yes. I remember back when I was in high school, kind of just discovered K-pop, and I would like watch YouTube videos and jump on forums, not just Tumblr forums and stuff like that. But because I want to learn more about Korea and the culture, because I've always been someone who likes culture and history. And there'd be people like, when I go to Korea, I have blonde hair and blue eyes. Korean men are just going to love me. I'm just going to find my boyfriend.
Well, there's two steps in just like, I guess, debunking that. The first one is, if you have blonde hair and blue eyes in Korea and men approach you, they think you're a prostitute. Because for a really long time, sex trafficking out of the Eastern European areas, specifically the old USSR, was really big in Korea. So a lot of prostitutes were Russian and they looked stereotypically Nordic. They were blonde hair, blue eyes. And so especially an old Korean man is like, you Russian? They think you're a prostitute.
I know myself. When I came in as an exchange student and when I came here in 2019, I had bleached my hair blonde. It's a style that I like. And I would get older Korean men, like grandpa age, coming up to me and asking me, either in English or in Korean, if I was from Russia.
I get that too.
As Ashley said, it's usually, if it's coming from older people or older men, generally they're asking you if you're a prostitute.
Especially if they're leering. They're like leering at you and like raising their eyebrow. They're propositioning you for paid sex.
Yeah.
Younger people are different.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of foreign models here, and many of them are from like Eastern European countries, Russia.
There's a huge Eastern European population in Korea for forever. They've been it's just a part of geographical landscape. So sometimes it's not someone propositioning you, but if they're being creepy and approaching you,
coming into your space bubble.
Yeah. I think the other thing to kind of break down goes into the Korean men will treat me like a queen phenomenon. Unlike other countries, Korean men are just like beautiful men that love every woman. No, they're like every man in every country. Some are going to be perfect. Some are going to be terrible. It's a spectrum of people. We do the same thing about every other country.
Yeah. Like, as Ash and I've talked about in the past before, like, just because you've watched K-dramas or you see idols from music groups and they're always on like their best behavior, and in dramas or movies, they're like going out of their way to help the girl. That doesn't always happen. There are some guys, doesn't matter what country they're from, they're always going to try and make every event or every day kind of special with their significant other. But that's not every guy. And there's actually a lot of Korean men that I've found and I've gone on dates with who they prefer dating foreign girls because they don't feel the stress of having to be perfect or having to go out of their way completely to do these special events, like the 100-day event, 200 days, 300 days, 500, 1,000. They don't feel that pressure, and they don't always like doing that because that's a huge financial burden for them.
Also, I think it's important to note, just the same way that not every Canadian man or American man is a prince, not every Korean man is a prince. People are people. Sometimes people are terrible. But this speaks to a different phenomenon entirely, which we're going to go more into detail in one of those deep dive episodes on the Korean wave. But it's an idea of, like, it goes back to, like, Orientalism, which, side note, I am aware is a very problematic theory. We will discuss it further later. But it's the idea that the East is something that's exotic and a little bit backward and a little bit less, but like this beautiful sexual thing. These are some of the categories. There is Occidentalism, which is the East interpretation of the West, which is almost identical, which I always laugh at because it's like everyone's backward here and oddly sexual. So that's kind of the key things of these theories, but that has been interpreted and changed over time. And now it has created things like a fetishism of Koreans. And fetishism is a word with multiple definitions. There is a like psychology, sexual definition. And then there is like a commodity buying and selling Marxist definition. And then there's a cultural definition. I'm leaning towards Marxist and cultural, less sexual, though it's an element of both. It's you attach a relationship or an ideology to a group of people. In this case, you can do the same thing for your cell phone. You can fetishize your cell phone. So you look at Koreans as a whole and you create this idealized version of them. And you create a relationship in your mind where you're like, they will love me and they will accept me and this will be perfect. Korean society is perfect.
I've met some of those.
It's the same with, like, it happens a lot with Japan. There was a phenomenon for a really long time. Don't know if anyone remembers the show My Super Sweet 16. I am old and I loved that show when I was like 15 to 16. There was a girl on there who was from like one of the southern states. And she had a Japanese-themed birthday party. Not a Japan, a Japanese-themed birthday, specifically. And it was the best example I have of the fetishism of a culture. It's just like an obsession. Everything must be, but it has to be a culture different from your own. If it's the same as your own culture, we call that patriotism, which is poignant. The American coup just happened.
Yep.
So that's kind of where, like, those memes of girls who talk about Korea or the Ollie Londons of the world come from. And everyone's like, why? Can we send them back?
And I will say, even though Korea and Hallyu or the Korean wave has become even more global and more people are looking at Korea on the global scale and not just as a hub for business or where K-pop music comes from or where K-dramas come from, more people are taking interest in the language, in the culture, and in the history. There are still people who they only see the surface level K-pop, K-drama, popular culture.
That is, I think this is going to get into a debate for the Korean wave episode, because that's the whole point of the Korean wave, is like, it's a very shallow push about your culture on a different culture. It's soft power moves.
No, but I just mean, like, in this sense, even though it's becoming more global, people, that's still the surface level, that's what some people are only looking at. They're not diving deeper into the history or the culture of the country, and they're like, it's gonna be perfect, look at these beautiful men and women.
I would like to point out, Korea doesn't want you to do a deep dive into their social hierarchies and situations within the country. So it goes down to a little bit of, you don't want to see the bad, and Korea also doesn't want to broadcast it. Do you want to start talking about our beliefs and why we have those beliefs?
Sure. So Ashley, start us off.
I think we'll start off talking a little bit about us, like what we grew up with, because this is going to explain a good majority of why we believed what we believed. So we grew up in Canada, which is a fairly new country in the world stage, in the sense too of like infrastructure wise, Canada's really new. So things like plumbing, electrical, by new, I mean in the past 200 years. Yeah. And then I grew up middle class. And Stacey, do you want to talk about your socioeconomic upbringing?
Yeah, so I was also brought up as middle class, but unlike Ashley, I was more rural. So I grew up on a farm from when I was born to when I went to university. I lived on a farm, small town, outside of towns, kind of thing. And one thing I will mention about my area, up until recent years, it's been predominantly white. When I went to elementary school, there were no people of other ethnic backgrounds. It was all white, French, German, and Dutch and English.
So I grew up in a predominantly European descendant area. So most people were from all of Europe. So what we now consider white Europe, which is most of Europe, and parts of the Middle East, but not really. That came later. I grew up in a suburb, Toronto. So I have the suburbanite looking at the city and dreaming of the day you move there. Again, all these things are going to come back to make sense. So I guess we'll start with what is your first thing that you thought was right but wasn't?
I think one thing was definitely in high school, I discovered K-pop and I thought it was really bad music. But of course, I liked history and culture, so I looked into that. But when I first kind of started looking at Koreans, I thought they all looked the same.
Yes.
Because I was only surrounded by, people that looked like me, I could not differentiate differences in Korean faces. So a big thing I remember, because I used to be really into Big Bang back in high school, is I got G-Dragon and Daesung mixed up. I couldn't tell them apart for like a year.
Yeah, I got into K-dramas, not so much K-pop, but 2011 K-dramas, which is very specific, but for a good reason, which is they all got cosmetic surgery to look alike at the time. Like it was really popular to go to the same doctor and get the same aesthetic. So for a while, everyone did look very similar. And if you're not super in depth and looking at it, it becomes like the Amy Fisher versus, is it Amy? Amy Adams versus Isla Fisher. That's it. Where they look similar enough that your brain's like, it's the same person.
Yeah, so it was really hard. And then as time passed and I started researching more about Korea and looking at more Korean faces or Asian faces, because I also was interested in Japanese culture and the art and stuff, I started to find features that I could differentiate people with, but it took so long.
I find it the easiest, like I said, with people who haven't had cosmetic surgery, or at least haven't had good cosmetic surgery, because I'm like, you look different. Okay.
Yeah.
I would like to note people forget us, and we do look different, because all white people look the same. So I'm frequently called by the wrong name.
Yeah. It works the same way in reverse as well. If you don't know many people or you don't look at many people from that ethnicity or whatever, you can't discern people very well. Everyone looks the same.
The thing that I had this like idealized, mainly, I will say it's a bit of Asia entirely, but definitely of Korea, is the idea that Korea is technologically advanced, like an anime or the future cities where like there it's like robots
Super
and
futuristic.
technology and everything's pushed like more like technology and everyday life is like
Intertwined.
intertwined a lot better. I was talking to somebody about this recently, and we were discussing how that is not true in either Japan or Korea. Weirdly, they're
Yeah.
countries that make these huge technologies and technological advances, but then they don't apply it. They sell it abroad. Up until like 5 years ago, Korea was predominantly cash-based, and then they kind of skipped the check card and immediately went to cell phones, like paying by phone, like tapping and paying.
I would say, even when I was an exchange student, it was more card-based.
Okay.
I would say the shift from cash to card, it was a lot more gradual than the shift from card to phone.
And when we talk about like getting cash, I don't mean using an ATM because ATMs are oddly still kind of used, but not really. Like people will still go into the bank teller, and that is more what you see, especially older people doing.
Yeah, what's that human interaction? And I think even in Canada, sometimes you see not everyone, but there are some older people that you do see who would rather go and talk to a teller in person than try to use the ATM.
Well, also here, like ATMs close. Like the 24/365 ATM is closed at 10 p.m. So it's a really weird thing.
They are open on national holidays, surprisingly, because sometimes that's hit or miss, especially depending on where you are.
I was telling someone recently about this. I was like, I'm from a place where people were using like heavy equipment to rob banks by like driving a bulldozer in and taking the bank machine. But like that doesn't happen in Korea. I've seen nobody with a forklift stealing an ATM. So the idea of like closing the ATM to me is weird.
Yeah, well, there's someone that literally goes and closes it and puts a lock on it and then comes back at like 5 a.m. and opens it. And it's like, why?
It's things like secure internet security. They have like security certificates still. And I'm like, we have pins and passwords that work better. It's encryption. Also, like why?
For banks. Oh my God. Banking here in Korea is a nightmare. It's not just because we suck at Korean. There's just so many passwords. Like I think I have like 6+ passwords for my one bank account, and I'm like,
it's starting to catch up.
Yeah,
so finally they're like updating everything so that it's becoming a little bit more secure. I have had my accounts hacked in Korea like probably every 6 months. I get like something is hacked. Korean internet security is not the best, which is shocking again because we have this image of like Samsung, well,
Internet Explorer,
and LG. Yeah, the commitment to Internet Explorer, and then the panic when it died, and then they got the Microsoft Edge, and everyone was like, what if it doesn't work? Like, well, you probably should have updated.
Move to that Google. And, like,
the fear of Google is real, too, here.
Yeah.
So what else did you think before coming?
I think because, like, I knew I was going to come as an exchange student. I had a lot of fear that I needed to be completely proficient in Korean in order to survive daily life. And like, even when I was taking Korean classes, it seemed like my professors were saying like, these are really good things that you need to know because if you don't know it, your life is going to be really hard. But then I came as an exchange student. It's like I was in Seoul, but there was like lots of English used. Even if it's not perfect English, you can get by pretty easily. Also with translator apps. Countryside can be a bit more hit and miss. But
I had the same thought, which was like no one will speak English because that was for a while. That was kind of true. Like very few people spoke it with confidence or were willing to speak it. So a lot of like early social media people talked about you need to learn Korean. So I was like, oh my God, I guess it's going to force me to speak Korean. Surprise. I haven't learned great Korean because I don't use it. If I go to speak Korean, people talk to me in English.
Yeah.
I use apps a lot, which apparently shocked one of my coworkers recently. And I was like, you know, I don't speak Korean. You know I don't read Korean. How do you think I've been surviving if I don't have Google Translate?
Google Translate has also gotten better, by the way. It used to suck.
So
it was terrible.
Naver. Yeah. Oh, it was the worst.
Like in the past, Naver was actually better than Google Translate, but Google Translate has gotten a lot better.
Which helps with interactions.
But like Ashley, I've had the experience where you talk to a Korean in Korean expecting, okay, I'm speaking in Korean. You're hyped up. Like, oh, here I go. And then they answer you in English and you're like, okay, thank you.
I think it's kind of like going to Quebec. Well, it's somewhere between like a panic, but also like when you go to Quebec and you speak French and then they're like, your French is shit. So they switch to English. And you're like, oh, I'm practicing. And they're like, I'm not your practice partner. You're not paying me for this. You're like, okay, I'll take my Earl Grey tea and leave. I think for me, one of the things that I thought, so Hyundai, which is in North America and all of their media and the way we're trained to say it is Hyundai, which I guess kind of makes sense. Yeah.
Hyundai.
No, but when you say it in North America, it's Hyundai. It's a really weird breaking up of it. And then you come to Korea and they're like, no, it's Hyundai. Oh, I had a bunch of commercials that was Hyundai.
Maybe it's in your area. It's never in my area. But then again, like in my area, Toyota and Chrysler were more popular. So we didn't have really the other car companies.
It's funny though, because like for a really long time when I moved here, I got made fun of and it was really hard to switch my brain over. But now I have a really hard time. I might be saying it wrong for North America now because I don't know how to say it again.
Yeah.
So like Hyundai. And then I was like, my whole life has been a lie. Also, why wouldn't you correct it?
Ease of pronunciation, like
you have your own marketing. No, they like they're in charge of their own marketing.
No, but I mean, like, you have execs in the other countries and they're just saying it the way they think it is. And then being in a foreign country, they're like, ease of pronunciation. This is
fun,
what it is.
Fun Hyundai story. I worked an event when I did catering for a dealership that was the largest in North America. So the head of Hyundai for like the company, like of the automotive branch, that member of the family came to Canada, to Newfoundland, to like look at this dealership. He was very lovely introduced with a konnichiwa. And I just watched this poor man die. And then everyone was like saying it the North American way. And I watched him die even more. And I was like, oh God, this poor man. He was super polite about it. And he kind of just nodded and was like, so you're going to make me money. But oh, the poor dude.
Yeah.
It was rough to witness. And this was the owner of the dealership. So the man who had earned that company millions.
Thumbs up.
What was one that you had when you came that was unexpected?
So this one is true for both it's not so much true now as a teacher, because I knew the answer. But when I came as an exchange student, I thought it was going to be a lot easier to make Korean friends. Because part of the reason why I thought that was I had run a language exchange in Canada for 2 years. I met like lots of Koreans. Some of them I did meet up with again here in Korea, but at the university I was at, I thought, okay, I'm going to make some Korean friends, or like, you know, out in public, I'll make some Korean friends because I'm at a university. But that wasn't the case. It's really hard to make Korean friends. And I know this is something that not only I experience, some people are able to make Korean friends quite easily. And I'm like kind of jealous. But for me, it's something that I've struggled with. As an exchange student, when there was like clubs days where you signed up for clubs, Koreans would see you walking and they would turn their back to you because they didn't want you to go over and initiate conversation because they feared maybe speaking English, or they just didn't want foreigners in their clubs. So that was something that was really hard. And even now, not just because of COVID, but in life, it's hard.
The other thing it kind of leads into what I thought was like, Korea is a lot of like the Korean entertainment industry is really good at being like Korea, young and hip. In reality, Korea has an aging population that is actually becoming a concern for society. And the fact that there isn't a young population replacing them. So there honestly just isn't a lot of young Koreans that socially could make friends with you. It's a really weird phenomenon of like, well, I can befriend this 60-year-old lady, or I can be lonely forever. Come here, Ajumma, we're now friends.
Yeah, like when I lived in a rural area, like there, like, so I lived north of Seoul, like near the border. So there was like lots of military, like Korean military. So I wasn't really friends with any of those people because A, they're serving, they don't have time for a foreigner. But then anyone else was old because all the younger generation had gone to Seoul or other big metropolitan areas for school or for work. So there was like no one young to hang out with. And then in Seoul, there are these young, hip places to hang out, but I'm not really a partier, so I'm not making friends in the club scene, which I know some people, that's how they make Korean friends, because it's social. Like, if they're female, they make friends with female Koreans, because they meet them while dancing in the club, or language exchanges. And that's just sometimes really hard to go to.
I think, too, as an adult, it is harder to make friends than when you're young, because when you're young, you have a social system set up that you're going to meet the same people every day. When you're an adult, that is your workplace. So you either make friends with people you work with, or you have to do a lot of effort. And when you're working 40 hours a week and you don't speak the same language, it adds a whole new level. And like a lot of young Koreans are working 60 hours a week.
Yep.
There's a lot of factors that before you come, your brain's like, there's categories of foreigners you meet that come to Korea under like ideas. And one of them that you meet a lot is like, my life's going to be completely different when I come to Korea. I'm going to have all of the friends. I'm going to go out all the time. I'm going to be super social. It just doesn't work that way. If you're outgoing at home, you're not going to, like, sometimes you can become more isolated when you move somewhere. But if you're a shy person at home, you're still going to be shy no matter where you put you in the world.
Yeah, very true.
That also goes towards it's hard to make friends. I have severe, like, crippling social anxiety. And then you add a language barrier on top of that. And if the other person I'm trying to meet has crippling social anxiety and a language barrier, that's DOA. We're dead on arrival. Like, we're not making it.
Yeah. But then also, too, I know, like, I'll just mention this quickly. Like, when you go to language exchanges, sometimes you meet people and you think, okay, cool, like, let's hang out. But then you get the sense that, like, you're not actually getting close as friends. You sometimes feel like you're the study buddy. You're going to help them learn English or whatever language they want to learn if you speak it. So that kind of creates that new dynamic. And even back in Canada, I experienced this with people at the language exchange I ran. I didn't feel like we were friends, but they would only hit me up to ask me grammar questions or to help them prepare for some English test.
People are people everywhere. Some people are good friends. Some people are looking to use you for a specific purpose. Unfortunately, it's something you don't always consider before you get here.
Nope.
I have one for, you mentioned it with the military. I didn't think Korea would be this militarized, which again, sounds stupid when you say it out loud, but it's important to note. So I lived in Canada, which isn't as militarized. Like, our military is laughably underfunded and everyone talks about this. My parents are ex-military. There's been a few rants. And then I spent the summer of 2014 in Israel in the occupied Palestinian territories, which the description of Israel is a military with a country, not a country with a military. So everything is super militarized. They don't really have police. They have the military. It's a really intense. People carry their, when they're on active duty, they'll carry their M16 assault rifle everywhere. So you get really used to seeing people pointing guns at you at checkpoints, which are everywhere. People with assault rifles and assault equipment and the huge like field radios, which suck because the guys with the radio never have spatial awareness. So they'll like smack you with it a few times. You're like, what the hell? So there was that. And then I moved to Korea, and Korea is somewhere in between, where it's like, you're driving along the road and there'll be a sign telling you if a tank can cross this bridge. And then your brain's like, oh yeah, we're still technically at war. The war hasn't ended.
Yeah. I think in my area, at least as an exchange student, it wasn't so bad. It was just like, you knew like where the US military base was in Seoul. So it wasn't too bad. But then where I used to live, it would be like, I'd be waiting for the bus to go from one school to the other school. And there would be like a procession of tanks. And that was like, this is where I live. Or the first week going back and forth to my school, and on the way home, being able to see the river that divides the two Koreas and the barbed wire fences with lookout posts. And I thought, I'm not telling my mom this, because my mom was already nervous.
Yeah, it's one of those like really weird things to like see, and then kind of you internalize it a little bit and it becomes your normal. But when you go home, you're like, oh, I guess that is weird, right? There's few bridges in Canada that tells you if the tank can cross it. Usually you have to be next to the base.
Yeah, definitely.
But here they're like, screw it. We gotta be ready. Where I lived, we were near an Air Force base. So every day, just like all you heard was them flying back and forth, which kind of got annoying. It stops me like shocking and becomes just a little bit of a daily annoyance. We're like, ah, stop buzzing the school.
Yeah, I think in my area, it was like you would hear the drills, like the practice gun firing drills, I guess.
Yeah, the firing range.
That's it.
So what's another one for you?
Another one for me, I think at least when I was an exchange student, it was that I wasn't going to be able to find Western food in grocery stores. So I did have Korean friends in university before I came, and they would tell me like, oh, like in Korea, you can't get this. Like, you can't find this product. If you want it, you should bring it with you. Or don't think that you're going to be eating XYZ food. You're not going to find it. Some of that did hold true when I was an exchange student, like certain products you just couldn't get. But now later on, like, it's not the case. There's so many like Western foods or foods from other countries that you can try and eat here, and you can find at grocery stores as well.
Yeah, I think that is the joys of coming at this period of time where Korea is becoming a bit more open to like, especially it's easier to get imported goods. There are still some things where I'm like, mom, can you send me? But there are few and far between. So, like, I normally ask for it to be sent to me, and then 6 months later, it magically is everywhere. I'm like, what? I spent $200 getting this sent to me.
Yeah, it was like last year, or not last year, my first year here as a teacher, I asked my mom, can you send me Kraft Dinner or KD?
Mm-hmm.
And she was a bit late sending it, but by the time she was going to send it, I was like, you don't need to send anymore. I found some in the baking section of Home Plus.
Yeah, like, that was like a revolutionary thing for me, because for the first 6 months I was here, you couldn't get it. And then one of our friends said to me, she's like, oh no, you get at the baking section at Homeplus. And I was like, since when? She's like, oh, apparently it's new. I've been trying to get this for months.
But like the weird thing was like it was in the baking section, like with your flour and your sugar.
Fun fact, it's no longer at my Homeplus. So I have to keep hunting. Sometimes like foreign food, you could get it, but then it becomes like a bit of a scavenger hunt. We once found A&W root beer.
Oh yeah.
Like at a store. That was magical. So where I used to live, so I was in like a village, and then the town near me had a grocery store called Kingsmart. And Kingsmart had the weirdest selection of items. One of them was a really strong imported food section. So it was always weird to go there and be like, why? This is like a town of like, I don't know, maybe 100,000 people. Why do we need this level of foreigner goods? But it was delicious and amazing. It was cheap.
Yeah, like they'll bring in products, like foreign products, and they'll be there for like 6 months. And then they'll just vanish. You'll be like, well, why are Koreans eating all the Kraft dinner?
And then not tomorrow.
Yeah. So sometimes you have to stock up on things, but usually it's not so bad anymore.
I'll start to wrap it up for me with this one because it's getting long. Infrastructure. I thought Korea's infrastructure would be newer. So things like garbage disposal, your plumbing, electric, all of that would be newer and more like metropolitan and modernized. Because again, it goes back to Canada's a newer country. So our, especially plumbing infrastructure is pretty decent. And then when you look at the image of the futuristic city that Asia apparently has in the West, you don't think to yourself, I'm going to have to throw away my toilet paper because I can't flush it in my own house, which is what happened to me when I moved rurally. And it was like, oh shit, rural, that's a thing.
Yeah,
I don't live in a high rise.
Yeah, it's kind of like one of those things where it's like you go to a bathroom in public and you're like, okay, we've talked about this before. Is the toilet paper going to be inside the bathroom and I need to grab it before I go to the stall? Is it going to be inside the stall or is it outside of the bathroom completely? And then when you do go to the bathroom, it's like, okay, can I flush it or is there a bucket for it?
Yeah, is there a big garbage can? If there's the big garbage can, you have to throw it away. If there's a small garbage can, that's for feminine products.
It's not so bad anymore, at least in Seoul. It used to be a lot worse, but that's because the city is updating plumbing in certain parts, not everywhere. But when they did have the Winter Olympics, they did spend time updating plumbing and stuff to make it more tourist friendly.
Well, the good rule of thumb is the building you're in or the area you're in boomed in the past 20 years? So neighborhoods like your neighborhood in Gangnam has boomed in 20 years. My neighborhood, which is on the outskirts of Seoul, boomed in the past 20 years. So a lot of buildings were built then. Like we have less old Seoul stuff. So like the image of Seoul is a lot of high rises and buildings like that. But in older neighborhoods, it's a little bit like 2 to 3 story buildings. They're a little bit more run down. They're like restaurants and then a couple houses on top, essentially apartments. Those neighborhoods have really terrible plumbing because it's really hard to fix and it's really expensive to fix because you have such an established neighborhood. So the neighborhoods that have boomed and became established and built really rapidly will have better infrastructure in places.
Generally.
If you go to the like central Seoul area and around like Dongdaemun, you're going to be throwing out your toilet paper. At places like a Starbucks, they're like, please throw out the toilet paper in the garbage can provided. You're like, okay.
Yeah.
My old apartment was 30 years old. That was like, do not flush toilet paper. My new apartment is 15 years old and we can flush toilet paper, which became oddly exciting.
Yeah, it really depends on the area and the location. And if you're moving into a place and you're uncertain, like ask your realtor or ask like who is providing your housing so you don't make a mistake, because the last thing you want is plumbing issues.
Also, it goes into with like garbage disposal. Seoul has a smell. Like cities have a smell in Korea and it's the smell of rotting food. It's just because of the way garbage disposal works here. So sometimes you're walking along, you're like, oh God, it's rotting. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that is gross.
What I was going to say is also like here in Seoul, because Seoul has expanded out so much and taken over old satellite cities, there are places that are like food waste processing plants that basically process all the food waste that is collected in different areas of Seoul. And it's supposed to be made into like pig's food kind of thing, or like,
yeah,
what is it called? Mulch. Compost.
Yeah,
like compost. Fertilizer stuff. That's basically what it's used for. But the thing is, like, the city has now surrounded those. So they can't expand those facilities, even though, like, there's now the population in Seoul is much higher than what it was. And now there's more food waste. So it just smells.
It does. Also, old buildings and mold. Korea is humid and they don't, like, buildings were not always designed the best for humidity or changing temperatures.
A lot of the buildings are cement. So cement will basically absorb the heat, also hold the cold. So you end up
with moisture.
Yeah, moisture. The moisture will either get sucked into the cement or it'll sit on top of the cement. And then you run into issues with mold. You get people that complain that, you know, they just constantly have mold no matter what kind of products they use on it. If they run a dehumidifier, they just can't get rid of it.
Yeah, but that smell seeps into everything. So it's like it's a very classic Korea scent where you're like, oh, I'm like, I went home to Canada for a month and I came back and was like, oh, I'm back in Korea. Smell it.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. But the travel books did not prepare me for that.
Nope.
Do you have a last one? And then we'll call it an episode.
Yeah, I think that basically like sums it up. We really covered a whole bunch of topics. Like, there's other minor things, but we can always mention them later on in another episode.
So there is more episodes coming and a few more deep dives, especially about things like COVID and looking at the Korea wave and K-pop. That'll come later. Today is just kind of a little bit of lightheartedness, poking fun at ourselves, because some of our ideas are stupid.
Absolutely. We're human. We're not perfect.
Yeah. And it's the same when you ask a Korean about going to Canada. They say things, I'm like, what? You cannot travel in one day by car from Vancouver to Toronto.
No.
But it's what you know. Try.
It's always fun to hear, and feel free to share your own with us as well. Yes. We don't know everything. We haven't experienced everything.
If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for episodes, please hit us up on our social medias or at anchor.fm/soulstruggles. We will incorporate them into the show.
So thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you all next time. Bye, everyone.
Yes. Bye.